Blog Talk Radio. It's been a long road getting from there to here. It's been a long time, but my time is finally, and I will see my dream come alive at last. I will touch the sky, and I'm not gonna hold.
Until you walk the path, you don't know where it goes. Happy Monday, everyone. I'm your host, Teresa Chase. And today, I on the anniversary of Ferguson and everything that has happened since then, I am hosting motivational speaker and author Dr. Donald Arnett. And we're going to be talking about how we can overcome the social barriers and help by helping each other move forward. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Today is hopefully a groundbreaking day for everybody. It's the one-year anniversary, and there have been some positive changes, but there are still so much more to be done. And I think you have a wonderful book out called I'm Supposed to Be Here, The Art of Dealing with Perception. And I think people need to read it because you help them find a new path.
Yeah, the book is, it's kind of it chronicles my matriculation through one of the top medical schools in the country. UT Southwestern Medical Center, where I graduated from, and actually when I was there, and still to this day, is probably one of the most prominent medical schools in the world. They have more Nobel Prize winners on staff than any other school, and it's just really, really a great school. And when I got there, it was very interesting times. So the book talks about a lot of those tough times that I had to endure throughout my education on the road to becoming Dr. Arnett.
Okay. Could you give us a little bit more of about your background? The Cliff Note version of how you got to be here and why you wrote the book.
Okay. Well, how I got to be here, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to be a basketball player like most other young kids. And it wasn't until my junior year in college I really realized that it wasn't going to happen for me, and professional sports was not my future, so I had to go with Plan B. And for me, Plan B was to be Dr. Arnett instead of, you know, an athlete. So that's when I decided to enroll in UT Southwestern, and I had some trials and tribulations with law enforcement and conditional acceptance into the school, unjust arrest, incarceration, you name it, which ultimately led into filing a civil rights lawsuit against the state of Texas. And I just, a publishing company approached me because when I was going through this stuff, it was all over the newspaper and the internet and what have you. And they told me that they thought that I should actually write my story because it would be so relevant for this day and age to actually show people a different way to approach wrongs that they feel that they've endured via law enforcement, and also an opportunity to encourage people to overcome adversity and not let your speed bumps turn into roadblocks.
Right.
So when I thought about it, I said, you know what, this would be a good time. And also it got a chance to put a new face on success. I'm a huge advocate of having appropriate role models out there for kids. And I give all the respect in the world to athletes and entertainers, but unfortunately, I really don't think that they're the best role models, and children shouldn't aspire to be them just because the percentage of success is so low, and they can do other things where they can have more control over their own destiny with education and stuff like that. So that's a little summary as to how the book came about.
Okay. Could you give us a little bit more detail about, you know, or at least, you know, what you're comfortable sharing about what happened to you?
Well, I mean, the what happened to me initially, when I got to UT Southwestern, even though I had great grades, was an athlete in college, I didn't get accepted. They told me that they questioned my dedication. And so the remedy to the solution was they told me I could come to UT Southwestern, but I could only come as a quote-unquote special student, meaning I took all the classes that everyone else took, but I was not officially enrolled in the program until I proved myself. And after I proved myself the first semester, got a call to the dean's office. They told me I did wonderful. And the reason that they gave me a chance, because they knew I could do it. For me, I thought that was a backhanded slap in the face. So, you know, didn't do it, they said, see, that's why we didn't let you in. If I did, that's why we gave you a chance. So, but at any rate, and then one day I was walking across campus on my way to, I can't remember if I was on my way to the labs or to the hospital or to study. And a policeman stopped me, and he asked me where was I going, and I asked him why was he questioning me, and his response to me was, you don't look like you're supposed to be here. And I was really taken back, because I like to consider myself a really snappy dresser and clean cut and what have you, and I thought I was above something like that happening to me, but he brought me down to reality real quick, and next thing you know, I'm on my knees in the courtyard, and you've got eight policemen surrounding me, guns drawn, pepper spray drawn, tasers, and, you know, everything from, you don't want to make this thing go from bad to worse, and so on and so forth. And, you know, basically I stayed there on my knees in the courtyard for 45 minutes. And ultimately one of my professors came by, and she said, he's a student, you know, what are you doing? And they ID'd her, and I said, okay, you ID'd her. She vouched for me, I'm going to leave. And they told me, no, you aren't going anywhere. You're officially detained. I said, for what? They told me, don't worry about it. I was devastated, you know, to think that that could have happened to me on the campus of a medical school where I was a student. And I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, you want to get even so bad.
Yeah.
And you don't know how to exercise, what action to exercise to give you that feeling of vindication because you got even because you know someone wronged you. So I filed complaints with the school, you know, they kind of rebuffed me and they told me that the solution was everyone would start to have to wear their ID at all times, and I wasn't happy with that. And then I just went on the move to try to find an attorney to accept my case, and it was a long process. So I finally found someone who decided to take the case, and they took it, and we filed a civil rights lawsuit, and school was difficult, you know, while you're suing the very institution that you were actually attending. that was tough. And then one day I was in the Carrolls, and part of the program I was in, I also, what you received a PhD when you got out of the program, and I was looking in the wall at photos of all the classes that have gone through since the early 50s. And one day I was looking at all the pictures, and I said, wow, you guys have never graduated an African-American. And they told me, well, you know, we never really thought about it. And so I found out I was going to be the first African-American male to finish this program. And that also gave me a lot of encouragement to go on and be the first ever. So, you know, I had that going for me. And 2 weeks before graduation, I got arrested again just for walking across campus while I have an ongoing civil rights lawsuit. And that time, you know, I got arrested for failing to identify myself, even though the policeman had my ID in his hand. He wanted my driver's license, and ended up going to jail because they said I had a seatbelt ticket, but I didn't. And then I had to go to the county jail and stayed there for days, plural, because the computer system was messed up and I couldn't get out. And so ended up having a couple of cellmates, and it was the scariest time of my life. And ultimately, you know, we resolved the lawsuit, but the book is called I Am Supposed to Be Here. And it's all predicated on that first statement that officer made to me when he told me, you don't look like you're supposed to be here.
Right.
So when we were trying to come up with the title, I figured that would be a pretty good one because it's all encompassing. It's not just about me. I mean, you can put that on anything and everybody. You know, you're supposed to be here. You're supposed to be doing whatever you want to do. So we don't have to put you in a box or put anyone in a box or put limitations on anybody. So I think the I Am Supposed to Be Here title is applicable to everybody. So I was really, really happy when we decided to go with that one.
It's you know, it's appropriate because there are so many people who are trying to limit others.
Correct.
Whether it be by gender or ethnic background or religion, they've got these narrow parameters that, you know, these people are supposed to fit in order for them to feel comfortable.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly.
Not what life's about. If you can't get, if you can't get past your own bigotries, that's your problem. Others shouldn't, force them to fit into your narrow cookie cutter perceptions.
Yes, exactly. And that's basically what the book champions, you know, everyone from right now you have the big movement for gay rights and what have you, and they just got it just passed, and now that they can actually marry or what have you, and if that's something you want to do, then good for you.
Right.
You're supposed to have that right. We talk about handicapped individuals in the book that in the normal scheme of things wouldn't be doing things like Oscar Pistorius, for instance, a double amputee. No one would have ever said that he would have been an Olympian. So he is supposed to be there. So regardless of his physical limitations, if he wanted to do it, he, you know, buckled down and got it done. Oprah Winfrey, the queen of TV growing up in Mississippi, she wasn't supposed to be the queen of TV, but you know what? She's supposed to be here now because that's what she wanted. So I'm not some anomaly out here. I'm proud of my accomplishments, but I know there's so many others that have accomplished a lot also. And everyone can do whatever the heck you want to do. And no one should be able to stop you or try to limit you.
Agreed. Before the show, we were talking about how to get past the other people's perceptions. But, things happen in the moment. And, the best thing to do in the moment is stay as safe as you can. So How do you basically defend yourself so that you can protest? You know, how do you deal with, like, law enforcement? Who is, like with Sandy Bland, she did what she was told.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I think that we have to err on the side of caution, number one. Number two, we really can't say everything that we have the quote-unquote right to say.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to remember that even though a law enforcement official may be 100% out of line, 100% out of line, you still have to do what you can to try to comply. Because if the guy is out of line, just imagine how out of line he's going to be if you disregard his orders or suggestions or what have you. So you could really, really make a bad situation worse. And we have to be mindful of these things. I mean, the Ferguson incident was a huge travesty. It should have never happened. The level of force that was exhibited on Michael Brown was, in my opinion, way more than it should have ever been exhibited on a human being who didn't have a weapon. But the one thing that I actually go back to, and I think a lot of us dismiss it, when they had one of the first interviews, they interviewed his buddy, and they asked him, they said, well, you know, we were standing here, the cop tells us to get out of the street, and then there was an exchange, and then blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, let's stop. Let's go back to when he said there was an exchange. I grew up poor. I grew up in the hood, so to speak, so I can imagine what that exchange was, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't, yes, sir, I'll get out the street immediately. So I would assume it was somewhat antagonistic based on my personal experiences when I was young and rebellious, so to speak, and when it comes to law enforcement. So the Sandra Bland thing, it was a travesty. She should have never been arrested. I feel bad for both sides because if you think about it, they showed the clip of the officer stopping another African-American woman prior to Sandra Bland, and he was asking her about where she was going to college and telling her good luck, and he let her off with a warning. And he was actually going to let Sandra Bland off with a warning because he had the ticket written up. But I think the situation went way left when he asked her, because, you know, I had an argument with my or a discussion with my father about this. And when you replay the tape, everything started to go bad when he said to her, "Would you put the cigarette out, please?" So it wasn't an order. It was a request. And in this day and age, you know, where smoking is illegal in a lot of restaurants and this, that, and the other, in my personal opinion, I don't think that request to put the cigarette out was some crazy, unreasonable thing, because he did say please and he said would you. He didn't say I demand you to or what have you. And when she said, no, I'm not putting it out, it's my right to, I can do this, I can do this and do that, I just have the opinion that when you're in it with a law enforcement officer, try to limit that interaction as possible, make it as small and as quick as possible. When you try to become antagonistic, even though it's you're well within your right and he is supposed to be trained to control a situation and so on and so forth, I think we give these guys a little bit too much credit, because I don't think most of them are really equipped to control a situation like that. And it's obvious as to how he responded. So I think we have to be mindful that the guy on the other side, even though I can say what I want to say and what I have the rights to say, this dude may go crazy. And yeah, if he goes crazy on me, it could end up really, really bad for me. Yeah. So so my position is comply now, complain later. You know, if he does something wrong to you and he violates your rights, you go ahead and comply. And then if you have the time, you go straight to that police station or what have you, and you file a complaint. Because one thing people don't realize is officers don't like to have complaints filed against them.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is we go home and we talk to our friends, we talk to our family, and we complain to our peers, but we never do it formally. So we're never going to get any real major change or impact when these types of things affect these guys' promotions, it affects their raises, and so on and so forth. So we have to make our voices heard the best way we can, and on the side of the road is not the venue to have your voice heard.
Well, with me, I did comply, and I was sexually assaulted anyway. And I was in emotional free fall for a long time because I was harassed a lot afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get an attorney to take my case, and I did file a complaint much later, and there wasn't an investigation, but it was just for show.
Mm-hmm.
And
no, I agree. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Nothing was done, and it's been my experience, and from what I've seen with others, and through talking with others, that the blue wall doesn't serve and protect the public anymore. They serve
mm-hmm.
and protect each other. And that's where the problem is.
No, I agree with you 100%. And the only question that I have is, you had a very, very unfortunate and terrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder, and I'm curious, in your opinion, you complied and bad things happened. What do you think would have happened if you would not have complied? Do you think if you would not have complied, if nothing would have happened, or what happened to you could have been worse? If even if you can even imagine,
complied, I would be dead.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So that's my point. So I mean, there's no absolutes. There's no guarantees. The only thing we can do is try to put ourselves in the best position possible to actually try and go home. Because, like I said before, if a guy is willing and has his mind made up to do something wrong to you and you don't comply, in my opinion, I think it'll just go even worse and worse. So it's a very difficult position. I think that we need to make our voices heard. We need to have more community involvement, and not just when there's a major tragedy, but even when there are isolated incidences, we need to be able to approach our leaders of the community. And one of the things about Ferguson that is just so disappointing, you talk about a city that is upwards of two-thirds, almost three-fourths African-American or minority, but less than 20% of those guys are actually casting a vote. So you actually can vote for that mayor, and you can have, as a community, a zero tolerance. And it's like, okay, Mr. Mayor, if you put in a police chief that is terrible, we're going to vote you out next time. And you keep going until you get the right guy in there. But it's kind of hard when you're not participating in the process to complain about the results. So that is a very difficult thing. It's disingenuous to say, oh, well, this is a terrible leader and this, that, and the other. And you say, well, did you vote for him? No, I didn't vote for him. Well, who did you vote for? Oh, I didn't vote for anybody because my vote doesn't matter. That mindset has got to disappear.
Exactly.
It's got to disappear.
Exactly. That is why we have the people in office that we have today. Michigan still has Snyder in office because so few people voted.
Exactly. And you know what the most crazy oxymoron is? You talk about gerrymandering, and even down in Texas where they say, well, my vote won't matter because they've gerrymandered the districts to where, you know, it's overwhelmingly in their favor as far as one political party versus the other. But the question I have for them is, where were you when they voted to do the gerrymandering?
Right.
So if we would have stood up in the beginning and voted it down, they wouldn't have had an opportunity to even orchestrate districts and this, that, and the other, because they can't just do it on their own. They have to have an approval. But if we're not participating in the process, we can't complain at the end. And I think that is the biggest thing that we need to remember and try to exercise. I mean, we have literally had people fight and literally die to make sure everyone had the right to vote.
Exactly.
And for us to take it for granted in 2015, I'm sure the people who actually were spat upon and had salt poured on them at those lunch counters in Alabama, and the people who got run over in Selma and all this and that, I'm sure those people, you know, they had blacks, they had whites, they had all races actually trying to push this cause. I'm sure they would be extremely disappointed in us now as a nation as far as the lack of participation.
And women getting the right to vote took 50 more years.
Exactly.
And it was the same type of thing. It was talking beatings, murders, jailing, the whole spectrum of violence, and they stood up for what they believed. It was their blood, sweat, and tears that gave us what we have. And if we truly stand up for our right to vote by voting, and if we stand with each other, we can make the change happen.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. I agree. So, I mean, it starts with us, you know, as a group.
Yeah.
And we can't just vote in national elections because, to be honest, I think the national elections impact us as a person much less than our local elections, because your county, your city mayor and the county and the state, states' rights are still there in a certain aspect, because some states can approve this, some can approve that. That has a much bigger impact than your vote for the president.
Right.
You know, so I think we really need to be mindful of that and participate in all elections and not the ones that just roll around every 4 years.
Correct. The midterms are the most important.
Correct.
Because that's a lot of state senators and representatives, are chosen.
Yeah, and I think those are the ones that have the minimal, the least amount of participation.
Correct.
And that's disappointing.
Also, I think that the digital age has given us a way to protect ourselves and others. Because if we hadn't made those videos, the cops would have gotten away with it.
Yes. I mean, you're correct. But as you stated earlier, when you talked about the blue, essentially protecting the blue, we can go all the way back to the Rodney King incident where, and it didn't really help. Unfortunately, it didn't really help Rodney King much. And then he had to file his civil suit because, to your point, if they are committed to protecting their own, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So video can sometimes help us, but I think now this social media age and every time something happens, it's available and we can have these public outcries. I just hope we have as many people voting who are liking things on Facebook.
Yes. You know? Agreed. We're down to our last 4 minutes. So this is our shameless self-promotion time. So how can people find your book and how can people reach you to have you come and speak at events?
Yes. My website is docarnette.com. That's docarnette.com. And on my website, you can contact me. There's a phone number on there where you can call or you can send me an email. If you want to email me, you can email me at booking@docarnette.com. And the book is available from my website. It's available on Amazon, iTunes. I am supposed to be here, The Art of Dealing with Perception. And hopefully with this book, it can inspire a lot of people and teach them that you can do whatever you want to do. And if I can get through all the stuff that I had to deal with, I'm pretty sure that you'll be able to get through what you're dealing with. And also trying to put a different face on what a role model really looks like for some of these kids, because I find it shameful that when I go speak to kids and I tell the presenters not to tell them what I do for a living, in 5 years, I tell the kids, I'll give you $20 if you can guess my profession. In 5 years, no one has ever said Dr. Arnette. I think that's disappointing, because
yes,
their
yes.
perceptions, or anyone who dresses like I do, talks like I do, they put them in a different category, and they never think that that person is going to be doctor anything. So I think we need to change our mindset as far as our experiences of what doctor or engineer or teacher or whatever actually looks like. So we need different types of role models other than what we see on TV as far as athletes and entertainers.
I agree. Donald, thank you for being on my show. And as always, I call my guests after the music plays through. And
okay.
So one of my favorite singers is going to sing us out with a theme from Mahogany, Diana Ross singing, Do You Know Where You're Going To?
Okay. Hey, well, thank you so much. I had a great time.